It's 25 minutes after the hour. It's a Tuesday morning, and we're pleased to welcome Dr. Don Clark to the air, to the studio. Well, actually, he's not in the studio. He's in Garden Valley, Texas. He's about, roughly 200 miles to the northeast of us down here in Harker Heights. And he's experiencing a lot of the same heavy rain we are, thunder, lightning. Any tornado threat up that way, Don?
We had some on Sunday, yeah. but nothing since.
Okay.
Yeah, we had a tremendous amount of lightning Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
We had one big flash that was, I don't know where it was, but it's fairly close to the house because it flashed and then we heard the sound.
So yeah, bang.
It was pretty close, but before that time, it was just a light show. Not much rain at the time, but it was a light show up in the sky, and then it finally started raining, and pretty much hasn't stopped since.
Yeah, well, up in East Dakota, they've already had snow, haven't you, David? You got little white
stuff.
It's
gone now.
It's gone now.
It's gone. It's
okay.
Gone.
Yeah.
The roof is brown again.
Okay. Well, That's good news or bad news, depending upon.
It's summer is here. We can tell.
Okay.
Oh, it's beautiful out there. Oh yeah, it's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Don Clark is a biochemist, a member of the board at Creation Moments, and their website, by the way, creationmoments.com. You can link to them from brokenroadradio.com if you're listening there this morning. And Don joins us just about every Tuesday morning. We talk about matters of faith. And creation and evolution and science. And Don, you've got a good one today, because I can still remember that picture. Must have been in a biology textbook, I imagine, of this kind of a furry creature walking on all fours slowly. You know, the next scene right next to him, he's standing a little more upright, then a little more upright, a little more upright. And then he's wearing a business suit and walking off to New York City someplace, I think, and carrying a briefcase. And that was proof to me. That's all I needed to know, that we came from chimps. And since then, talking to you, I've learned differently. And it pleases me to know that the research on SAME, on that issue, is still going on. What's the latest finding, Don?
Well, that imagery that you just portrayed there is unfortunately still in a lot of museums and in a lot of schools and in their museums, and it's completely wrong, of course, but it's wishful thinking on the evolutionary side. And if chimps and humans are very, very close, then maybe one indication is that maybe their DNA is so similar. Just a few little tweaks here and there make the difference between a chimp and a human.
Now, I know I've heard that a mouse DNA shares 90% resemblance to human DNA. So I'm thinking 10%. I mean, there's a big difference between mice and men, and it's apparently that difference is made, assuming that's accurate, by that 10%. So how close does a chimp need to be to be considered a close relative?
Well, that is a very good question. The evolutionists, the first DNA comparison studies between a chimp and a human yielded results that were very, very similar. In other words, that they said, obviously chimps, humans evolved out of chimps, because the DNA analysis is showing 98.5% similarity between the chimp and the human. Of course, they didn't subsequently tell you that the DNA was contaminated with human DNA. The chimp DNA was contaminated with human chimp DNA, and that the pieces were relatively small. And it kind of went on and on. It was, to say the least, a very flawed study. But even so, evolutionists grabbed onto it and said, yes, this is proof, that this is the proof we've been ultimately looking for. We can't find those transitional forms, but we've got now proof from the DNA. Well, researchers continued to study this issue, and of course, a creationist looked at this issue as well. And when they looked at it, and when they got some clean DNA data, let's put it that way, and compared it with humans, they were getting a number of 85%. So the DNA was significantly different between chimps and humans. And a recent study this year on the chimpanzee genome, and another group doing an analysis, they finally determined that yes, the original study was quite flawed. We've taken a lot of pains not to contaminate the chimpanzee DNA samples with human samples, and we're doing an exhaustive study. And their analysis is showing that maybe only 80% of the chimp DNA is identical to human DNA. And their segments were a lot larger than the original segments. Their DNA was a lot cleaner. And the more you look, it's one of these things, you know, the more you look, the more you find. And what you're finding is that indeed chimps are different than humans. Who would have thought? I mean, you know, you could look at the chimp and look at a human and say, gee, there's some similarities, but they're different.
Get that via barber, and he's human for all intents and purposes, huh?
Yes.
I don't think so.
If you really break down the DNA and look at the differences, a lot of differences in the human DNA is in regions which used to be called junk DNA. That is, regions in the DNA that did not code for a specific protein or something. It weren't the coding regions of the DNA, but it was the spaces in between. Well, we've learned since being the 80s, 90s, we've learned since that these regions in between the coding regions is very, very important in expression control, for example, in the protection of the DNA, and in other aspects of the DNA that makes it absolutely essential to have those regions in there if you're going to have exquisite control of the DNA, which, you know, the more complex an organism is, or an animal is in this case, or a human is, then the more control you need on the expression of the DNA. And that's indeed what we find. It's take a bacteria like Escherichia coli, E. coli. Its DNA is actually pretty, even it is complicated, because the Escherichia coli, the whole DNA is expressed, but not only that, it's a circular DNA. It means that it makes a complete ring, if you will, like a rubber band, and it codes in both directions. Normally, we think of the DNA being read only in one direction. But the Escherichia coli's DNA is read in both directions, and it's jam-packed with information both forward and backward in coding the DNA. If a little bacteria is that complex, how much more complex is something like a human DNA, or even a chimpanzee DNA? It's very, very complex, but as the new research is finding, the human DNA there are some similarities, and you would expect there to be some similarities if you have a common designer. And you would expect that, okay, you know, every eukaryotic cell, it needs some type of energy. And so you would expect to see, For example, mitochondria, the energy source in the cell, you would expect to see those in other animals besides humans, other cells besides human cells, and indeed you do. And the code for those basically very convoluted structure with a specific purpose of forming adenosine triphosphate, which is the energy carrying molecule within the cell and causes most of the chemical reactions within a cell, you would expect to see those enzymes to be pretty similar between, let's say, humans and chimps and pigs and, you know, pigs and human DNA is pretty close too. If you think 80% or more is close, then we're close to a pig. But you never hear anybody ranting and raving from an evolutionary point of view saying that, hey, we came from pigs. And
tell us about the nature of science, one, and about how we should take grand scientific pronouncements and huge discoveries and findings like, hey, chimps and, you know, chimpanzee and man are directly related and in fact close cousins. How should we take that kind of news?
Well, we take it in light, of course, you know, as Christians, we should take it in light of Scripture. And, of course, we do not find in Scripture that God created man from a chimpanzee. He created him afresh from the dust of the ground, as it says in chapter 2 of Genesis. And so, while, as I said, there may be some similarities, we are completely a different creature and different in many aspects. You see, and so when we get pronouncements like this, we should say, I don't know. Let's look at the research. Let's see what they've done. Let's wait a little while and see if the research is a sloppy research as it was in the original DNA analysis.
Well, and I don't know that we can point a finger at those scientists because you know we're better at DNA now than when those findings were first pronounced. But you know, sloppy work happens. People are less than perfect. But the science of DNA has come a long way in the last 20, 30 years, hasn't it?
Oh, it has, very much. I mean, we can now do sequences with much greater accuracy than we did before, and much faster, by the way, because of the automatic machines that we have that actually does the work for us. Mm-hmm. It's not laborious like it used to be, where you had to carefully isolate the DNA. Well, you still have to isolate it, but once you have the DNA, then you've got to, put it through many different types of analyses until you finally come up with, your result. Now, all of that is pretty much automated. And you can get results much faster and much more accurately because there's much less human intervention. But the point of the initial study that was done, it was directed by a false premise. And that false premise was that we think humans evolved from chimpanzees. So we're going to
stop right there. We think it is, therefore we will prove it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And that's what they started out to do, and lo and behold, that's what they did. And if the research was a little sloppy, well, or if they only looked at regions within the DNA that were comparable, that had similarities between the chimps and the humans and only counted those because that's what they also did in the original study and not looked at the total DNA. Folks can get pretty biased in science. And I don't think, you know, a lot of people realize this, that science is not this pristine, it should be. I mean, you should be after just pure facts instead of creating your own reality within doing scientific research. I mean, if you were an honest scientist, you would say, you know, I'm gonna do the best job that I can. But unfortunately, folks that are working in the evolutionary biology field, they're not so honest. And they come in with such preconceived notions that they bias their research. And so we should take a lot of this stuff with a grain of salt and really, you know, our belief is not in man. Our belief is in God. And when God said that he created us from the dust of the ground and he created us in his image, therefore we are different than the animals. We have a different purpose than the animals. And God was interested in having a relationship with us, a special relationship. Then we should understand then when we run across such research that this is highly, you know, could be contaminated, if you will, with man's thoughts instead of the actual, you know, data being very accurate.
Well, what I would suggest is that the evidence of our eyes is more convincing than the evidence derived from test tubes, and that at best, when science makes a pronouncement, discovers a principle, investigates, researches, publishes findings, that at best, that's partial knowledge.
Yes, that's partial knowledge. But, you know, unfortunately, in many areas of life, we're biased. We have preconceived notions. And so, therefore, that colors or flavors everything that we do. And when our notions are absolutely wrong, then we're going to, more times out of, you know, than not, we're going to come up with the wrong answer or a wrong conclusion, I should say that. If the research is done properly in an unbiased way, then you're left with the interpretation of the data. And even the interpretation of the data, as we've talked about in several times on this program, can be biased, and you still come up with the wrong conclusions because your assumptions are wrong.
And part of this, I think there's a difference in science that pertains to philosophy and things outside the realm of quantification. I mean, things like God, science really can't investigate. But things like how to make a better steel, or how to make a better computer, or a faster computer, the knowledge is adequate for that. And so there's a difference when you apply scientific knowledge. It's like working backwards when science tries to prove a philosophic point. I'm not sure that makes a whole lot of sense to do.
Well, yeah, that when you're that's it, you know, science doesn't say it can find God or it can understand God or in matter of fact, you know, of course, evolutionists and atheists would say, you know, there is no God, so there is nobody to be found. And everything that we see, including the human DNA, which is extremely complex. Even, as I mentioned before, the E. coli DNA is extremely complex. Even this complexity and even this exquisite engineering, right? We say, oh, that just happened by chance. And so even logic goes out the window when you throw God out the window and assume that there is no creator.
Well, that assumption doesn't answer the question. It avoids it.
It avoids it. And yeah. It says we can't answer the question, so therefore we're avoiding it. And everything that we see on this earth has to be described without a knowledge of God, and that's what we're going to try to do. Anybody who tries to use the starting point that God created, then their assumptions are obviously wrong from the very beginning. And time and time again, we see in the created world that if you ignore that there was an intelligent designer, if there was a creator God who you know, loved us and wants to have a personal relationship with us, then you come up with the wrong conclusions, and you pretty much are stuck with coming up with foolish conclusions, and you know, you ignore the obvious.
And that suggests that evolutionists in particular essentially thumb their nose at all those who have come before and developed the principles and the basis upon which we exist as a human culture, and they dismiss it as nonsense. which I cannot countenance. That's difficult.
Mm-hmm. Well, they do, and you know, we like I said, we all have bias, and I'd prefer to be on the side of the Creator God than on the side of saying that there is no Creator, when obviously there is so much engineering and design in this world that to ignore it really turns you into a fool.
Well said. Talking with Dr. Don Clark, biochemist and member of the board of creationmoments.com. Want to point out their website to you once again. It is creationmoments.com. And the whole purpose of that ministry is to be an archive of scientific information that supports the biblical story of creation. And when I say science, I say that respectfully, because there is ample science that does establish the Bible as not a scientific document, but rather as history and as true and provable, something that evolutionists have trouble doing. Don, thanks so much for coming by. Oh, by the way, you can link again to creationmoments.com from our website, which is brokenroadradio.com. Make it convenient for you. Don, thanks very much for joining us today. Appreciate it, and I hope you can fight off the rain and keep your feet dry. And we'll see you next Tuesday. Okay?
All right. Well, very good. Yes, nice talking with you all again. And it's gotten a lot cooler, too.
Boy, it has.
The rain 40s. Came, the cool weather.
40s.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Cold, I remember, from East Dakota days. I remember.
It's nice up here.
Well, the sun will come out here again, too.
All right.